Gettysburg Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast. Conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more. With voices from around the corner and around the globe.
Some time ago, our guest today handed me a volume of great American literature, which included stories by Ernest Hemingway, John Steinbeck, and Elsie Singmaster. The question today is, who was she, why have we forgotten her, and why should we read her again? Our guest is Susan Colstock Hill. She is the author of Heart Language, Elsie Singmaster and her Pennsylvania German writings, published by Penn State University Press, a very handsome volume, and the soon-to-be-released article, Elsie Singmaster, Gettysburg Storyteller, in Gettysburg, A Search for Meaning, as well as an ancillary story about Elsie Singmaster and Violet Oakley, the painter of the great mural in the Pennsylvania State Capitol, which depicts Lincoln at Gettysburg and includes, much to Elsie's surprise, one of the characters from her stories. Now, if I keep on talking, we won't have to have conversation today. Start, Sue, then, with the first question. Why should we... Let's take the what question, or who question. Who was Elsie Singmaster?
Elsie Singmaster was a woman writer. She wrote from the turn of the century, the 20th century, up through 1950. And she was a resident of Gettysburg, although she lived her early life in eastern Pennsylvania. She was widely published throughout the country in various scholastic journals and then popular magazines. And she published nearly 40 books with the Houghton Mifflin Company and others, primarily the Houghton Mifflin Publishing Company. So she was a single woman. She was a widow. And she used her life to write stories.
That was it?
Yeah.
But
she did a lot of also community work locally.
We'll get to that. Yes,
yeah.
Yes. And very much in community and national work, too. And we'll talk about that when we talk about her attitude toward community and especially about gender. Certainly a Victorian lady in every way, so that in 1950, her stories had probably passed out of popularity because Victorian ladies and men were not popular anymore. Furthermore, the stories are marked by a certain kind of regional color that lost, or at least didn't have the popularity that the hard-bitten stories of a Hemingway continue to have.
Exactly. Social changes, particularly during the time of World War I, affected the readership and their desire to read certain kinds of literature. Local color had been extremely popular when she first started to write, and that is actually what brought her to the fore when she was writing about the Pennsylvania Germans. And she was widely recognized as a writer about Pennsylvania German culture and then later on about the Battle of Gettysburg. But, yes, she grew out of favor as the public attitudes toward women writing about small towns became less popular after the war, where people were interested in adventure stories and
hard-bitten detectives,
exactly,
like Guy Noir and others.
And also, you know, people who wrote about the Industrial Revolution
and the dark side of
American society.
The Ashcan School and everything else. On the other hand, I was thinking in preparation for this conversation, Sue, Mark Twain is a regional writer with local color, but something about the issues involved in there mark him out as a person of lasting quality. We still read him because there's something, we enjoy the local color still. So Elsie could be resurrected, and after your book, I imagine it's going to be on the rise again, we hope.
We hope. And that's what I've maintained, that largely because she had been known as a local color writer, and that eventually became something associated with women and weakness and all of those negative things that were attributed to women. She was pushed to the sidelines. But then later on, when regional literature was again more popular, she was re-identified as a regional writer, and she has some very important, I think, heroines in her stories that are just quintessential regional heroines. And so I think she's beginning to be rediscovered.
Now, you know, in the 1970s, it seemed to me, I don't know for sure, but certainly by the 1970s, we were beginning to rediscover women in the arts. They'd been pushed aside partly by male chauvinism, right? We saw a show of the works of the great Frida Kahlo, the painter, the Mexican painter,
yes,
the movie about her a few years ago. And she wasn't really rediscovered until 1970. And then there are some of the women authors who were not well known until the recent time. So
right.
Whatever the reasons, now we can probably look at them with a little bit less prejudicial eyes. Tell me a bit about her life before we move on to other subjects. It sounded very mundane, very pedestrian, but it really didn't start out that way. Did she ever marry?
She did. Yes, she married when she was in her 30s. But she, unlike many women of her era, was educated, quite well educated. She had a couple of years before going to Radcliffe College.
Oh, yeah.
But those were at Cornell.
Mm-hmm.
But then she transferred. She took maybe 5 years off and then went to Radcliffe College, where she graduated Phi Beta Kappa.
Mm-hmm.
And
learned her writing skills there?
She first learned to write at Cornell.
Mm-hmm.
She was specifically pursuing a writing career at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And that was where she discovered that the Pennsylvania Germans were really underrepresented,
mm-hmm,
in literature. And she was encouraged by a professor there to write about them. So she took 2 years of education at Cornell and then went home to write.
Mm-hmm.
And she did begin then to publish in 1905. But she thought after a while that she should return and finish her degree because she didn't feel that she had a good enough academic background to go forward. So she did that and was quite successful as a student and was writing at the same time.
But she did marry.
So, and yes, and then she... She graduated in, I think it was...
Early 19th century. Early
19th,
20th century.
Yeah, right. And then married in 1912. And married a man named Harold Lewars.
L-E-W-A-R-S.
L-E-W-A-R-S,
mm-hmm,
yes. Who was a musician and a teacher. And unfortunately, he lived just 3 years after they were married and died of, well, during the influenza epidemic. And very sadly, she was, she lost the child that she was pregnant with at that time, just a few months after her husband died.
Yeah.
So
this ordinary Victorian lady.
She was acquainted with tragedy.
Tragedy and suffering and,
yes,
understanding. That, I mean, to double blow in 1 year. We're talking to Susan Colstock Hill, the author of Heart Language, Elsie and Her Pennsylvania German Writings, which we're expanding out today because she's also talking to us about the new article she's written for the forthcoming book, Gettysburg, The Search for Meaning, called Elsie Singmaster, Gettysburg Storyteller. So we're wondering why we haven't discovered Elsie Singmaster long before this, particularly as an interpreter of war and the issues of war. What are the reasons why we want to read Elsie Singmaster again?
Well, first of all, she's an engaging writer of fiction. her stories certainly were written in the context of her Victorian culture and her point of view. But in terms of pace and suspense and so forth, I find them engaging. You mentioned the latest writing that I did, the essay for the new book, which is about Gettysburg stories. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you read those stories, you do get caught up in what must have been the tension and excitement of the people in Gettysburg in the days leading up to the battle and during the battle. Mm-hmm. So it becomes much more real, even though these are fictional stories.
There's a town of 5,000 or 6,000 or less. There's 100,000+ on each side, a little less on the one side, sweep over this little village.
Right, and they're in and out, and
you
in
know,
and out.
It's just like the floods in Texas or the hurricanes in Kansas. Mm-hmm. They're in and out. But the overwhelming numbers and the devastation and destruction. Does she have a single heroine throughout these? Throughout all of her Gettysburg writings, is there a
certainly
single
not
lady?
All of them? She wrote quite a few stories and books about Gettysburg. You could fill a couple of pages of, you know, typewritten pages with the titles of her Gettysburg writings. My essay particularly addresses stories about a heroine named Mary Bowman, based on a real character in Gettysburg, Tilly Pierce, later Tilly Pierce Alleman, and Tilly Pierce Alleman wrote a memoir about her experience during those days prior to the battle and during the battle. So Mary Bowman was primarily, at least in the beginning stories, based on Tilly Pierce Alleman's experience.
That's a book to read in itself. It takes
it
about
is.
A half an hour, but
yeah.
It is gripping because it's firsthand, and she was a little girl at the time. The war, when it came to town, she left in order to get someplace safe. It wasn't any safer where she went.
No.
Ended up doing a great deal of hospital work without any experience
right.
that a young girl or a young man shouldn't have to do. And the kids in this town, by the way, that's another story sometime.
Right, yeah. She
had to pick up the slack.
Yeah, she was related to the Weikerts
mm-hmm.
And went to the Weikert farm, where she nursed the
mm-hmm.
soldiers
yep.
during the Second Day's Battle.
Yep. And they were taken care of with a couple little kids from the house next door. Marvelous story itself. And Mary Bowman, then, is based on Tilly Pierce Alleman.
Yes, there are three stories about Mary Bowman. And the first story particularly has sometimes very close parallels to Tilly Pierce Alleman's book. Later on... Well, the second story, the first story is about the days prior to the battle and the first day of the battle. The second story is about November 19th. And then the third story takes place 50 years later. And that Mary Bowman, in my estimation, grew out of the story of a woman who lived in the gatehouse at the cemetery.
Yes. Elizabeth Thorne.
Elizabeth Thorne and her experience. And not only her experience during the battle, but the way that she wanted her story to be told eventually. And that is interesting in contrast to Mary Bowman, who was very reluctant to tell her story mm-hmm. about the battle days because of the pain and loss and suffering that she also mm-hmm. experienced at that time.
You know, there were Second World War veterans and, of course, Vietnam veterans who don't like to talk about the war very
right.
often. That's done over and back, and I suppose that's the kind of issues you got there. Speaking of big issues, you mentioned that she was a Victorian lady, and we've tried to disabuse ourselves of the fact that she was somehow above it all. She was very much involved in the life of suffering, even though it was an everyday life, but she knew tragedy. But as a Victorian lady, I've got to ask, did she push the boundaries of gender just by being a writer and being educated?
She did and she didn't. Certainly, that was a growing trend. More women were being educated, but her education was really quite an elite education. So that was unusual in itself. Not many women were being educated at that time, but there were growing numbers. But she had some factors going for her. She was part of a class of people that believed that they had a leadership role in our mm-hmm. country, mm-hmm. and that is because her father was president of the seminary, so she, you know, had certain status in the community, and then she had education, and she furthermore had something to say, and she was also a very good writer, very good storyteller. Again, something that we believe she inherited from her father, who was also known, and she would often say that he was a great storyteller.
On the one hand, I've heard a story about her that would make her a typical Victorian woman, and then we'll contrast there with her real talent. It was said that in her latter days, when the young men were out here playing football, often without their shirts on, this drew her criticism. She didn't think that was proper attire for seminaries.
Exactly.
I don't know if it's true or not, but it does contrast with a woman who was far more educated, more talented, and more elite in the best sense than the ordinary person, including most men of that mm-hmm. period. So she did push the boundaries, which is important.
Yes, her characters, she often wrote about women characters mm-hmm. and always encouraged women's education through her writing, always encouraged respect for women and honoring for their roles in society. And sometimes she would really turn the tables where the, you mm-hmm. know, the women would be the heroines mm-hmm. and be the smart ones, you know.
Yeah, okay. The thing that we haven't talked about that really is essential to Elsie, and she'd want us to bring it up, would be her view of religion and history. She was devout. She was a practicing Christian. She was the daughter, as you said, of the president of the seminary for where we're broadcasting today, Gettysburg Lutheran Seminary.
Yes.
Very active in religious affairs. How did it affect her writing?
She had a perspective on history that really included her faith and her roots in Pennsylvania. She believed that God acted through history, and that becomes clear in her writing, particularly about the Civil War, where in not only her fictional writing, but in a few pieces of nonfiction that she wrote about the battle, where you get the feeling from her writing that there are forces behind what is happening. Directing what is happening. And also morally, her characters are very strong moral individuals, as she was known to be herself. And she actually felt that she had a mission through her writing to promote what was morally good. And I would say that she saw religion and morality is certainly
close.
Very close.
Mm-hmm.
She, at the same time, was a woman with a real good sense of humor. And by the way, that story about the shirts, taking shirts off mm-hmm. during the football mm-hmm. game on the campus of the seminary, that was true. That was told to me by Herm Stempfli. And he was one of the people who was involved.
It was criticism.
He eventually became president of the seminary.
Right.
So
shirt or no shirt.
Yeah, right. But people have told me stories of her humor, and I've read about her humor, and so she was certainly not a dour kind of dark personality at all, and she used good stories to make her points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But she did have a very serious intent mm-hmm. in writing, and when she would write for children, she was quite clear to say that children need to be given good moral things to read and that will help in their development in their, of their character. And, of course, their character development was important because they're citizens of the United States
of
America.
Yes, and she had a very strong feeling about the role of America in the world, which we've hardly touched on.
Yes.
All good things to be reasons, all reasons, good reasons to read. Once again, Elsie Singmaster, the author and the woman of the previous century, who has been slightly overlooked lately but is on her way back, we hope. Our guest today, Susan Coldstock Hill, the author of Heart Language, Elsie Singmaster, and her Pennsylvania German writings, published by Penn State Press, available on Amazon.com?
Through Amazon.com,
and
yes.
Bookstores and everywhere, hopefully. And author of an upcoming article in a book that will be announced shortly. You can check on the website of the seminary, called Gettysburg Storyteller, Elsie Singmaster, Gettysburg Storyteller, and a shorter article in the same book, A Meeting of the Minds, Elsie Singmaster and Violet Oakley, and the Mural of Lincoln at Gettysburg in the Pennsylvania State Capitol. For the Seminary Explorers, I'm Jerry Christensen. Have a very good day.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explorers from historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, a production of Gettysburg Seminary. We invite you to visit our website at www.ltsg.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of Gettysburg Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.